Hello, my name is Vanessa Vallely and I'm CEO of We Are Tech Women. I'm delighted to introduce She Talks Tech, which is a podcast which brings to life the personal experiences of women and men working in tech with a focus on diversity, equity and inclusion. We also include the odd technical topic to keep you abreast of innovating areas of tech that may be of interest to you. So this is a brand new season, season six, and we're delighted to focus on a number of incredible women looking at their career and sharing their top tips for success. In this episode of She Talks Tech, we hear from Alison Welsh, Chief Revenue Officer at graph database company Neoforte. She is also the founder of financial wellness community for women, Poppy. She currently sits on the board of Bucknell University's Freeman School of Management. So, Alison, can you tell me a little bit about your role at Neoforte?
Sure, and it's great to meet you. Thanks for having me. I joined Neoforte in December as their first Chief Revenue Officer, and my role and responsibility is to oversee the what we call the revenue organization, which encompasses really any of the functions that are engaging directly with our customers and potential customers. I like to think of it as customer focused rather than just revenue focused. The term chief revenue officer has its benefits in that you're responsible for driving numbers and driving results, but you're also responsible ultimately for the outcome of a customer successful relationship. So I see myself as the leader of that organization. We have multiple functions within our business across the globe.
So how did you arrive at your career? Was it something that you planned or was it something that just kind of happened?
I think there was never a moment in my upbringing and my earlier self where I said, I want to be a technology leader or a chief revenue officer or anything that with that level of specificity. Both my parents were hardworking and kind of self-made through their own endeavors of going through, putting themselves through school and achieving their own degrees, et cetera. So I always knew that advanced education and having financial independence were really important. That was sort of rooted in me from the beginning with my parents. So I knew that I'd be somewhere in the work world, but I wasn't quite sure where I was going to specialize. Originally thought I'd be, professionally focused, like a lawyer or, a role where I had a degree that told me what to do, yeah. If you will. Both my parents are in the medical field. So I always kind of have envy that, well, if you have a professional degree, you know exactly what you're supposed to do, right? That's actually not even the case. But I went through a traditional liberal arts education and followed a path into business through my exit in university and started in consulting. Didn't even think about technology as a direction, just wanted to be in business and learn some of the fundamentals of running a business. And was also coincidentally being, I was deployed out of college, my first job was in San Francisco. This was in the mid 90s when the software companies like Oracle and Siebel and Apple was just kind of starting to get, it's going through its emergence. Dell and whatnot were on the scene, and I happened to be in that area, and there were a number of startups in the mix as well. And so after a few years in consulting, I think it was just through osmosis, frankly, that I got pulled into the technology world in the Silicon Valley, and from there here I am in technology. What, 30 years later, 27 years later?
That's quite a journey. But I guess in a consulting role, you get to see what you like and what you don't like and where you could potentially go. But was it actually as clear cut as that?
I don't think that was the case. You were deployed. It was definitely not your choice as a, 25 year old in a consulting firm was basically here's your assignment. You're being moved here for... you work here during the week and we don't really care where you work, where you live. You just get on a plane on Sunday night and go to this job and come back on Thursday or Friday. And hopefully that works for you. And that's what it was, really. There was so much just sort of basic methodology and training available as well that made, sacrificing some of that time to just, it was really rewarding to be in that place, but I didn't get to choose. It wasn't one that said, oh, the variety of consulting helped me deliberately go into technology. I wish it was that directional, but unfortunately it wasn't.
So how are you getting on in this new role? Tell me a little bit about what that entails.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I'm day 65, so I'm new to the business. So definitely honeymoon period, but it's been fantastic. This is my fourth technology company in my career. And I really wanted to understand what was happening in the world of data as we're faced with so many, you know, different challenges with data quality, privacy, just volume, sheer volume of data in our lives. And it felt to me what Neo4j had built and what their mission and their value to their customers is really to help make sense of all of that and bring the hidden attributes and the most fundamental attributes of the data together in a way that companies can benefit. And I'm really enjoying seeing that in at work every day with our customers and within the business.
So you seem to have developed your career through consulting and then obviously subsequently through management, and now you're at the C-suite. What do you think makes you such a good leader?
Oh, gosh, I think you should ask someone else that.
You obviously are a great leader. You've had lots of experience growing up like in all of these amazing different companies, and that's very much what our listeners aspire to. So tell us a little bit more, how do you think you've built your leadership capability? That might be a good place to start.
You know, I have had success there. I've been fortunate to work with a number of people, and I think what great leaders do, frankly, and what I've taken with me as I've worked for many great leaders over the years is the power of the team and the importance of really building that sort of vision for the, what are we going after? And what is it going to feel like? You know, why are we climbing this mountain together, this hill together? When something seems really untenable or, difficult, what's good? When we get to the midpoint, how take a moment to relish that and then get to the next point. And so really creating kind of mile markers along the way that help us feel like we're moving things along in an important way and sort of keep the noise of the challenges that come, to a minimum and try and focus. I think there's also really an important human element to leadership in terms of active listening and being calm and being present for your team that I've instilled in my work and my approach. Versus being sort of the director or the kind of dictator. I'm not a dictatorial leader by any means. I'm more of a I definitely motivate by bringing people together, but then having us align on a common theme and listening to the different challenges that there will be in that dynamic, and then trying to mobilize around. And I look for, I think when you're building a team, I really look for people who can handle kind of pace of change and dynamics, because I tend to come into companies that are earlier stage or going through a transition. Twilio definitely was doing that. And now Neo4j is going through kind of a transformation zone. We talk about it in our all company discussion around transforming into a cloud business and what that takes. And it's not for everyone, but here's why it's really interesting and rewarding and making it part of the lexicon so that the team can orient around it.
So what do you look for when you're looking to build a team? Like, what is the behaviors, for example, that you recognize as someone that would go on to kind of be a leader?
I mean, it's always a positive when you run into someone who is just dynamic and eager and interested in doing more. But I also, balance that energy with reality, which is not everyone's at that stage and it's okay. And you don't have to be in a place where you just want to do more and step up and take on more responsibility. I've had, multiple phases in my career where I've really enjoyed being at a certain level, and I've stayed in that level for a period of time, and I've focused and I've, achieved the goals at that level that I wanted to achieve. So it's not, I don't think you have to form a team that's always just ready to go to the next, the next thing or the next level. I think it's a balance. Based on where people are and what where they can contribute, and you can create a great team dynamic with that.
Women are very much in a minority in tech, certainly in the UK. I mean, there's only 17% of women in the IT industry, and I think it's something like 24% in the wider STEM community. How do you redress that balance? How do you think we as a society can get more women into tech and, more importantly, into leadership roles?
Yeah, I was recently looking to hire a couple of key leaders for my team here. Mm-hmm. And one of the dynamics that I noticed, and I've heard about this challenge, and I think I've probably put myself in this position in the past, which is women tend not to be ready for something unless they're 100%, 110% qualified, or 100% know the business, understand it end to end, and say, you know what, this works for me. I know how to, I understand it, and I could apply my skills. Yeah. And I saw in this these two specific roles that I was hiring for, you know, I was really trying to recruit women into the roles, kind of proactively. I'd hired a team to recruit for me who are focused on women leaders and technology and really just sourcing at that level. It was, I had so many fantastic conversations, but the one thing that was challenging was that the women didn't feel like they were ready for this technical business. Neo4j is a complex graph database. You know, maybe I don't understand that well enough. I can't necessarily port my skills into this business. And I would just encourage women, if you're having that thought, to try and balance that against, if you put in your mind the other candidates, you know, whether they're men or however they identify, they probably have as much or less experience in that industry or in the space that you're applying to. And so don't worry about not having 100% of the criteria met. Put yourself out there and be comfortable with a little bit of unknown. That fear of you know, learning is actually going to be something that's really rewarding for you. Yeah. Deliberately, as a leader, my responsibility, I feel, is to hire, to build diverse pipelines when I hire, to always assess diverse populations, making sure that my panel, you know, my candidates have a different, you know, variety of different backgrounds. That's something I'm deliberately doing. And if I come to a decision where I don't hire a woman or I don't hire, you know, that profile, it's okay, but I'm certainly making the effort.
So what do you think about mentorship? We all know how that kind of can really level the playing field for women in tech. So is it something that you do?
I do mentorship. I'm actually right now putting a lot of my time into the academic stage of career, I guess, where I'm on the board of a university at my alma mater, Bucknell University in Pennsylvania, where I spend time mentoring juniors and seniors in university who are evaluating their opportunities exiting the university. And there's definitely a number of women in that population who are considering, most of them are considering careers in consulting or finance as their first step. And I think part of that is because those firms provide great training and great, we'll get you up to speed, we'll you know, get you to that 100%. So it's like kind of a safe place. And I certainly went through that. I went to the consulting because I knew I'll get trained before I'm put in any uncomfortable situation. In terms of, you know, I think those are great paths, but I don't think they're the only path. And I think the STEM environments, the tech companies, we need to participate in that way as well and make it accessible for individuals who haven't been in technology to enjoy the opportunity to come over to that sector. I had success at Twilio. We hired several people in my team during high periods of growth who came from consumer packaged goods industry, from non-tech, non-STEM sectors, and were just like some of the top performers very quickly because of their work ethic, not because they knew technology. They just had, you know, a drive and an interest to learn. And that grit or that intellectual curiosity that I love to see. And it doesn't come from, you know, this beautiful background or pedigree. It comes from life experience.
So let's talk about your wellness community for women. You've just founded a company called Poppy to help deal with the financial wellness for women and to give that security to women around their financial well-being. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Poppy is something I started with a friend of mine before the pandemic. And it was out of a conversation. We were sitting in the coffee room at our office. And this was actually probably kind of a mentoring conversation. I was with a woman who's earlier in career than I, but super smart, someone I look to for how do I understand this and you know, help me understand. She was mentoring me and I was mentoring her. I love those bi-directional things. And she and I were talking about how, you know, nothing that is available to us, we can use as a safe space to talk about some of the financial decisions that we're making as women as we become earners and you know, have financial success. From my experience, it's my husband who gets asked about, oh, do you want to invest in this? Or would you ever think about this, you know, real estate idea or, you know, yada, yada, yada. When in fact, I'm actually part of the capital contribution for the family, but I'm never really consulted. And it was just kind of interesting. We came to this agreement that, yeah, we don't really get that opportunity. We're not in that room. How do we become part of it? Why is it important to us? So there's two dynamics. One is the importance of financial independence and being able to have the means to contribute. You know, there's a lot of confidence around financial security for women. And I think that's, you know, extremely important. It's something that I've put myself in a position of being independent financially for my family and for my work, but also creating an opportunity where women can get on a call together and have a community conversation or build a network for each other. If you're considering making an investment and you want somebody to, you know, give you their opinion, it's a trusted place to go that isn't, you know, a paid, you know, accounting or a paid financial advisor type of situation where you're like, are they really giving me good advice? Or are they doing this more for their pocketbook? So trying to simulate that, you know, men's lunch that we're not invited to in a women's community. So we started just doing a bunch of different sessions with various topics. We had crypto as a topic. We talked about prenuptial agreements for you know, a lot of the women in the community were thinking about marriage and their first relationships and how to manage those things as they had their own financial independence. And it became just a really great platform for us and a community too. And I'm super passionate about and have enjoyed building.
Can you tell me a little bit more about changing your career?
So we're talking now about, you know, maternity leave and time with your baby or your that stage of your life when you're growing your family. And we label it as returnship, right? Wouldn't it be nice if it wasn't labeled and it was just sort of part of your career? Because frankly, that's how it should be. And so to me, when I think about, I've had so many conversations with women about, oh, I don't know if I can have a baby. I really don't want to disrupt my career. Things are going so well right now. And, you know, I don't want to take that time out. And I'm a mom. I have two kids. I have a 17-year-old and an 11-year-old. And there's nothing in the world that I would want, you know, more than those two kids and my relationship with them. And there's work is so interesting and fulfilling, but there's the level of fulfillment that you have being a parent is just, it can't even compare. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be compared to your career. So I wish we could change the lexicon on that returnship or maternity leave or someone's on maternity leave. Well, okay. So just changing the mindset about it and not feeling badly about taking the time, but this is part of life. And I've seen great programs, they have to be programs versus just giving the person the benefit of the doubt that they can do it.
Yeah.
And the best is when you actually, you know, you come back and then you just propel because of course you have the skills. It's just unfortunate that you have to be leveled at a different level. And that's something I'd love to challenge that.
I totally agree with that. I don't think we should be kind of singled out just because you've taken a break.
I mean, I hope this is helpful for women in who are considering careers in technology. My advice is just jump in and you know, measure yourself at the 100% level. If you have a strong work ethic and an interest, you'll be successful and people will help you along the way. Don't be afraid to ask for help. So for me, I'm Allison Welch on the LinkedIn. You can always reach out and mention this conversation or mention interest in Neo4j. If I can help in any way, I'll certainly leverage my network. It takes that in order to succeed. So asking for help and then not judging yourself at being 100% qualified are my two recommendations for women to help us increase that 17 or 24%. 17% IT, you said, and 24% STEM. Yeah, let's get it to 50.
And that's a lovely thing to end on. It has been a really wonderful conversation.
It was great to meet you.
Alison, I cannot thank you enough for being my guest on this episode of She Talks Tech. And thanks to all of you for listening. We really appreciate it. If you want to find out more about Alison, you can connect with her on LinkedIn. Please do subscribe and rate the podcast and give us that all-important 5-star review. And keep tuned to our channel for new episodes of She Talks Tech.